This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It's a pleasure to welcome my colleague, Professor Richard Epstein, writing at the Civitas Institute, Civitas Outlook, about trade, much in the news. Richard teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Trade and the trade war, so-called, since April 2nd, must now take into account new facts. Financial Times, no friend of the Trump administration, we can all agree. London reporting, U.S. economy beats expectations with 177,000 jobs added in April. Subhead, figures indicate labor market's resilience despite Trump administration's deep cuts to federal workforce. I mention also in the news the People's Republic of China's speakers. Last week, we're calling the U.S. a lonely little boat in the world of geopolitics. This week, they've switched metaphors. I thought maritime was inappropriate for what we're talking about. They've gone to, our door is open, always open for trade talks. Richard, you write cogently of reciprocal tariffs, which the Trump administration believes is necessary to close the so-called trade gap with states and with blocs. I mentioned the example this morning of the EU in negotiation with the Trump administration, saying you did not take into account our consumption of American services. And if you do that, our trade gap is not nearly so large, merely $50 billion, which I think is a rounding error when it comes to trade between the U.S. and the EU. And they believe they can close that to almost zero by buying things such as bourbon. What is the intention of the Trump administration to talk about reciprocal tariffs? Why did they do that? Good evening to you.
Well, I think it was a huge mistake. Basically, everybody agrees that the lower you can get tariffs, the better you're going to be, because tariffs are discriminatory taxes, which essentially favor inefficient companies over efficient companies, inefficient countries over efficient ones. A reciprocal tariff says we're trying to get rid of the deficit, and we're going to do that by having somebody buy from somebody else things they don't need. The reason that nobody in sort of general economic and international affairs cares about the deficit is that it turns out, just to take a simple example, if you're a firm and you sell to another firm, the more you sell to that particular firm, the greater the gains to both of you, because these are positive sum trades. What happens is the deficit between those two firms starts to increase as well. And the issue is, why do you care about the deficit when you have this huge gain? And the explication is, well, there's some kind of distortion, but there isn't. What happens is you then look and say, well, if I'm the buyer, and basically what happens every time I do something, I'm in a huge trade deficit. Well, be a seller to somebody else, and he's going to be in a huge trade deficit to me. So what you have to do is you have to aggregate all of these deficits, and they cancel out, whereas, on the other hand, the productivity gains continue to accrete. And so that what you're doing is you're using deficits as a marker in the individual market when it's inversely proportional to the welfare of the situation. It's also extremely difficult to calculate trade deficits. You gave the example of what happens with the EU. Services are a huge portion of the economy. And if it turns out that what you have is services going predominantly from the United States to the EU, why are you going to worry about any deficits that remain? They're small relative to the whole thing. And the EU may be able to make it up in some third market, and the United States may be able to make its stuff up in a third market as well, or a fourth market. And so nobody really cares about it. And now what's happening here is what you're talking about is a symbolic cure. They basically will buy more bourbon from the United States. Well, that's perfectly legitimate, I suppose. But there's nothing which says that that transaction, if it's forced, is going to be for the mutual gains of both parties. So what you're trying to do is to even up trade by essentially creating inefficient transactions that nobody ought to trade or to create. And that's why people are so against it. The WTO has always worked on the opposite principle. If you get everybody in on the negotiation, the country-by-country deficits don't matter, and you could concentrate on the overall growth of trade, where essentially the maxim is the lower the level of taxes across countries, particularly discriminatory taxes, the higher the level of growth. So people are very much afraid of what's going on with Trump on that ground. Now, you mentioned something else, which I think has to be talked about, which is the American economy seems to be doing pretty well, notwithstanding this. There are two answers, I think. One is in other areas where Trump has started to move, he's been very constructive, essentially in the energy sector and in the environmental sector. What he's done is taken pretty much pro-growth mechanisms of one kind or another. And so when you're trying to figure out what the economy is about, you have to take those positive developments domestically and set them off for the international developments, which I think in general are negligible and are negative. So what you do is you're going to see a better picture because he's doing some right thing. The Biden administration, in contrast, was just terrible on environmental and energy policy, beyond horrible. And even on trade, what they did is they had the same kind of attitude of protectionism that Trump had, only they did it in a slightly different area. They were insistent on making sure that foreign countries, which had labor practices different from our own, could not import into the United States. And so what they wanted to do is essentially protect unions instead of large firms. And they were also wrong on that particular stuff. Now, I think Trump will get away with this. And there's another element I should mention. The larger the unit with whom you're negotiating, the more likely it is that you'll be able to find a deal. There's so many points that are going on. And as you mentioned, once you put in the stuff having to do with services, the gaps start to shrink because what happens is not all in one way. So if you're trying to negotiate with the EU, it will be easier than trying to negotiate with Hungary and Poland and England all separately, because those things have the narrow imbalances that you talked about on deficits. And when you put them all together, they tend to cancel each other out. And so essentially the way I would think of it, although I've not talked about this before, is an EU-wide negotiation is much more like a multilateral trade system than it is like a bilateral reciprocal trade system. And China is a similar situation. It's sufficiently big in so many ways that it's probably easier to ignore the deficits or to correct them in that situation than it is in others. So if Trump is trying to run a strategy in which he expands the targets to have fewer negotiation targets and broader bases, then he's going to improve the possibility of success of his program. The other thing I think that nobody quite understands is how long do you think this thing is going to last? So you see the improvement, but you also see a lot of exemptions. And so you need to get automobile parts into the United States. Well, you should do it. Now, I have several friends, for example, who work with medical devices, and they say, if Trump imposes his tariffs, I can't do anything because I have a very long supply chain that comes all over the world. So some industries will do better, autos. Others will do worse, medical devices. And what's going to happen is the hope is that Trump will, on a piecemeal basis, basically give larger exemptions here, longer time deadlines there, special collateral advantages of support somewhere else, so that by the time you're done, the picture isn't as stark as it was when he announced everything on Liberation Day. Oh, by God, what we're going to do is simply set the world upside down. And so I think, in effect, the situation is fluid. People have asked me for my advice, which is not worth very much, but, you know, nobody's advice is worth very much, is do I think this stuff will last? And I think what's going to happen is Trump will never admit that he makes mistakes. It's just not in his nature. But what you will do is you'll see a little bit of negotiation progress on some of these reciprocal deals, like with Europe. And on the other hand, you'll see some relaxation of the constraints. And what will happen is his instinct for survival will essentially protect it. Remember what he ran on. He ran not so much on tariffs as I'm going to give you higher wages for better work and a more sensible economy. And if the tariffs start to threaten that in any sufficient way, he will be killed in the popular market by his own supporters. This man has a lot of survival instincts. He doesn't want to be in that position. So what I'm going to suggest is that he's going to muddy this thing up enough so that by the time you're done, you'll see the kinds of reports that you did reported that this thing is not going to be as disastrous. The economy will be more resilient. The success in large part is attributable to the fact that Trump, by pieces here and pieces there, is backing off his universal liberation. And the quicker he does, the better we will all be.
Professor Richard Epstein, Civitas Institute. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.